I'm Teresa. I'm a compulsive eater.
Hi,
very glad to be here. You know, this Play-Doh's great stuff. Janice is going to be working hers so I don't have to while I speak. And Barb has been having a fabulous time up here in Timer. You have no idea how much sun service can be. So she really has a creative little timer here that she's created with her Play-Doh. So, oh, God, 15 minutes is just absurd. I mean, you know, if I divide that up over my life, you know, I got like a minute for every 3 years. If I divide that over my recovery, I've got like a minute for every 1 year. That's ridiculous. That can't be done. So anyway, here I go. God, I came into this program first time around in May of 1989, and I walked into my first meeting. It was a speaker meeting. And it was kind of like yesterday morning when I was late, and I walked in the front. And what happened was it was a speaker meeting. So the podium was up front, and all the seats were up like that, only the door was back here. So I had to walk in. Went all the way to the back, sat down. This woman started talking, and she was insane. This woman was crazy. I mean, I had a food problem, but this woman was really sick, you know. And I would have left, except that I would have had to get up and walk past. And, you know, the way I worked my program at that point was I binged on the way in the parking lot. I shoved the bag underneath the seat before I walked in the building. As I walked out of the building and walked to my car, I'm keeping an eye on the door to see who might see me pull the bag back out from under the seat as I'm heading out of the parking lot. I went to 6 meetings a week, and that was exactly all I did for my recovery, was I sat my butt in a chair for 6 hours a week, and it didn't work. So I don't recommend that. Second time around, I came to OA in May of 1989. Between those two periods of, well, before my first time in OA, I had joined a commercial weight loss program, weighing 188 pounds, followed it very rigidly, ate the absolute minimum they let you have. It worked very nicely, got to my goal weight, kept losing weight, got too thin, started binging. You know the story. I regained all the weight very quickly. There was 1 week I gained 9 3/4 pounds. And if anybody had told me that you could gain almost 10 pounds in a week, I would know you were an absolute liar because it can't be done. But I've got the card. I was working for the weight loss organization at the time as one of their weighers, and we weighed in before we weighed everybody else. And I stepped on the scale, and they wrote down that I had gained 9 3/4 pounds, and they kind of looked at me and said, "Are you following the food plan?" And I said, "Sure, but I've used all my extra calories for the next 20 years this week, and I'm a little ahead of myself." No, I'm not following the food plan. You know, when I followed the food plan, it worked. I'm not. And so we came to the mutual conclusion that I was probably no longer the best representative of the success of that program, and we fired me. You know, what I would like to be now is a good representative of the success of this program, because this program saved my life. I believe that I have a disease that is cunning, baffling, powerful, fatal, and patient. And it is waiting for me. You know, I had a little time last night to go walk along, you know, the main drag, walk down the boardwalk, walk down the main drag, and I saw all the people eating ice cream. I'm not blind, you know. My God, my trinity, for those of you who come from that tradition, was pizza, brownies, and ice cream. And this was my God. This is what I depended on to get me through everything in my life, you know. I can still walk down the street on a hot day and think, damn, ice cream. I don't want it, though, you know, because I've got a life now. And, you know, this disease, for me, is really, truly a matter of life and death. And for me, my life was a living death. I did not live. I existed. I got up and I binged from the time I got up in the morning until the time I went to bed at night. I ate all day long at work. I ate a couple breakfasts on the way to work. I ate breakfast at work. On my lunch hour, I could hit 3 drive-thrus in the hour. I ate from the time I got off work until the time I fell into bed. And I only stopped because I was so sore and so sick and so tired that I could not eat anymore. So I wrapped it up very carefully and I put it in the trash so that the next morning I could carefully unwrap it and start in again. Now, if I really didn't want to do that, I could have flushed it. I could have put it down the garbage disposal. I could have taken it out to the dumpster. But, you know, I knew I was going to need it in the morning. I don't need it now. I have something better. And, you know, when I came to OA the second time around, I was not a quick study. I came to OA the second time in May of 1989 and got abstinent July 19th of 1990. And I didn't have any more than 2 weeks. But I was coming. And I was trying, and I was trying to work the steps. I remember going to this monastery to work on a fourth step, only I did it in the cookie room, where they had the 24-hour hot water pot and the cookie jar. And I'd get up, grab a couple cookies, sit down and write for a while, get up, grab a couple cookies, sit down and write for a while. Not the recommended way to do a fourth step in OA, by the way, but, you know, at least I was trying to do something. And I stuck around until the day came that it all clicked and it all came together and I got abstinent. And, you know, service has been a big part of my recovery, and I love service. And I, you know, I love this program more than anything else in my life. And that's saying a lot, because I have a lot of things in my life that I love today. I started out, you know, doing the typical stuff, setting up the chairs and taking the key and chairing the meeting and stuff like that. Our little area decided against their will kind of to start an intergroup and just barely got it started, and I was going to chair it, and then I suddenly moved. But when I moved, one of the first things I did was I got my first sponsor. I married to a recovering alcoholic, and he had strongly suggested that I get a sponsor, preferably one with about 50 years of recovery. Oh, Wade hadn't been around 50 years yet, so, you know, I don't know what he thought I was going to do, but I did get a sponsor, and I did not want that sponsor. I mean, this woman was insane, for God's sake, you know, the things that she did. When I asked her if she'd be my sponsor, she said, yeah, but this is what I expect from you. I expect you to go to at least 2 meetings a day, to read the big book every day, to write down your food and call it in to me every day. You don't change your food no matter what unless you call me and explain to me first why that's necessary. And the mere thought of doing that was enough to keep me from doing that, you know. And this woman was responsible for me going to my first recovery event, because I called her in the morning to call in my food, and she said, oh, by the way, I'm not going to be here this weekend. And I said, well, what are you doing? And she said, I'm going to a retreat. And I'm like, oh, retreat, what's that? Well, they had space available. I went with her. That was my first recovery event. And where I was from, I'm from a small town in Iowa. There was not much recovery. You know, where I got recovery was going to recovery events, to business meetings, to eventually Reason Assembly. When I moved to Des Moines and got her as my first sponsor, I remember within a couple of weeks of moving, she said, we're having intergroup elections. What do you want to be? That probably isn't quite what she said, but that's what I heard, and that's what happened. I mean, I left there with an office, and I've had almost every office since then. When I first went there, she was actually the region rep, and she would give a report about going to region assembly, and I was sick. You know, I thought it sounded like a lot of fun. And she, though, I thought was going to be like the region rep for life, and I'd probably never get a chance. Well, I moved to another intergroup. Our region rep became the vice chair. There was an opening. I took it. Went to a region. Thought it was fabulous. Began to dream of maybe going to the World Service Business Conference thing today. But I knew I couldn't, because I came from this little tiny intergroup, and we were poor, and we had no money. You know, we had the intergroup where we had the 3 people who played musical chairs. Okay, right now your chair and region rep, this other person's vice chair and delegate, and the other person is secretary. And then at election time, you get up and you move over one chair, you know. And that's the way it was. There was no one who wanted to do service. And but lo and behold, the region had money available for funding. We applied for it, and we didn't even need it because we passed an extra basket, and I was able to go to conference as the World Service Business Conference delegate. Did that for 2 years, and then had an opportunity when Connie became region trustee. There was an opening for region chair. Before that, I'd been region secretary, and the trustee at the time had approached me at the region convention to say, we've got 2 openings coming up, one for secretary and one for chair. And I'm like, well, number one, I have not been here long enough. I have no clue what I'm doing. There's no way on earth I could be chair. And secretary, not in your wildest dreams, over my dead body, would I be secretary. Well, when I showed up at Fall Assembly, they came up to me and they said, you know, our secretary isn't here at this assembly. Could you take minutes? You know, yeah, that first sponsor was the one who said, you know, you say yes. You know, if she was at an event and people were supposed to come up and pitch and people weren't coming up, she'd start pointing at people. And when she pointed at people, they got up and came up and talked, you know. So I became secretary, and then I became chair, and darn if I haven't put my name in for region trustee, too. And last night when Donna was talking, I turned to my roommate and said, oh, my God, what am I doing? You know, and there's a part of me that thinks, oh, man, and there's a part of me that thinks, I would really like to do this. You know, when we talked, when I asked Janice, you know, what she kind of wanted us to talk about, she said, I don't know, talk about what we're talking about in the strategic plan. Talk about the importance of strong abstinence. Talk about the importance of having strong meetings. You know, talk about service. Talk about whatever. There's four or five different areas, I think, that we're focusing on, four areas in the strategic plan. One is strong abstinence, strong meetings, committed service bodies, and outreach to public and professionals. And, you know, originally there was a fifth one, and that was going to be abstinent members. And then they decided that that was kind of like when we used to have the pamphlet about the tools where they had abstinence as a tool. Mm-hmm. And then they decided abstinence wasn't a tool, abstinence is our primary purpose. Mm-hmm. You know, they decided that abstinent members, I mean, that's what we're all here for. You know, to have that as one of our goals in our strategic plan is a little bit ridiculous. And all the other four depend on having abstinent members. You can't have a strong meeting if you don't have abstinent members. You have no one to do service if you have no one who meets the abstinence requirements or who understands that it's a good thing to do service. You're not going to have anyone to do that work of getting the message out to the newspapers and the radio stations and advertising the recovery events and the conventions if you don't have abstinent members to do that footwork. And you don't have anybody who can demonstrate recovery to the professionals or to let them know that this program exists. You have no abstinent members. No one gives at the meetings because no one values what they have, what we have here. So, you know, I believe absolutely that without abstinence, I have nothing. You know, I have a really good life now. I have a life beyond my wildest dreams. I am married. I have a ridiculous number of cats in my household. Don't even ask. But, you know, like someone said earlier, I don't know this moderation thing. You know, what do I know about moderation? If I knew, I wouldn't be here. You know, getting involved in service has been so critical and such a blessing in my life. I have changed so much since I've been in LA. It's just really impossible to explain. And I've had so many gifts as a result of this program, I don't even know where to start. You know, being here is one of them. Standing up here with all these other wonderful people and with you is one of them. You know, I live in Iowa. We don't have a really good ocean in Iowa. We have the Mississippi, which is nice for what it is, but it's not quite the same, and the beaches are usually sandbars in the middle of the river, and they're a bit hard to get to, you know. So as a result of my recovery and my service in this program, I've had the luxury of being to the beach twice this year. Because in March, I went and gave a retreat in Oregon because somebody that I met at World Service Business Conference asked me if I would do that, and then now I'm here. And I'm told that this is not exactly the typical weather that you have at this time of year. So, you know, we're really blessed. When I came into this program, I was scared of everyone and everything. You know, so many people this morning have been talking about fear and the importance of doing this stuff even though you're afraid. And, God, that is so critical for me in this program. You know, this program for me is about doing the things that terrify me. This program is about doing the things that I don't want to do because I'm told that that's the way you recover and that it's good for me. You know, and good for me was never a strong selling point. You know, they said that about broccoli, you know. What did I care? You know, I wanted brownies. So, you know, good for me does not come naturally to me. When I'm in the disease, all I know is disease and death and destruction. And like other people talk about, I was so miserable when I was eating. And if I was that miserable, I was bound and determined that I was going to take you down with me, you know. And I spread as much misery as I possibly could. There's a woman that I know who is getting married in about a month. And she's marrying a man that she met at the World Service Business Conference. She went to the World, and she's from another little small town in Iowa. She's marrying a man from Boston. You know, if she'd stayed sitting eating in her living room, she wouldn't be getting married today. Now, you know, that's not to say that being in recovery and doing service guarantees that you get a trip to the beach or that you will find your life partner or anything else of the kind, but what you will find is even better than that. I have had the privilege of seeing so many people recover in this program. I see people who come in, who sit at their first meetings, and they cry, and they're miserable, and they're terrified, and they're hopeless. And I see them become abstinent and grow and blossom and change. our current region secretary is going to be our World Service Business Conference delegate this year. And that is the very best thing about being in recovery in this program and doing service, is being able to carry the message of what has saved my life to other people and seeing their lives changed and saved as well. So I'm glad to be here, and I'll pass.